couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Blade Runner 2049, The Stray, The Mountain Between Us, My Little Pony, and Generational Sins. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, an interview with Mitch Davis, the writer and director of The Stray, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Cult of Chucky. Yes, it's October, so I'm going to dive even deeper into the horror movies with really just Cult of Chucky. All the rest of them are bona fide just regular movies, dramas, award bait, science fiction movies. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It's actually been kind of a slow news week when it comes to movies. Of course, last week, I didn't talk much about this, but we had the whole Avatar sequels are set to start filming, and they're actually ready to go. Allegedly, these things are going to be coming out at some point. We've been hearing that for almost 10 years, and it's so funny because it's so hard to predict whether James Cameron's movies are going to be a success. Because if you follow the signals that were being given off by Titanic, that thing was going to be a bomb, and it became the biggest hit of the world. And then, of course, the same thing with Avatar. It had to do as well as Titanic, even better, just to break even, and it did. Can he keep this up? I mean, are these Avatar sequels actually going to be groundbreaking? Is it going to be a whole new Avatar? Is it going to be worth four movies at, like, a price tag of $1 billion? Or are we going to get tired of them? Who knows? I mean, the big news that came out this week is that Kate Winslet is going to be joining in on the sequels, which is fine. You know, she was in Titanic. But I hardly call her a draw. But then again, those movies were never draws based on the people's names in them. It was because it was Avatar. So that to me is just kind of a non-news story, because Kate Winslet being signed to a movie doesn't make a movie do well or not. I mean, she's been in a lot of great films. She's been in a lot of artistic movies that haven't made much money. And she's also been in a lot of flops, both critically and box office wise. So good for you, Kate Winslet. You have a job probably for the next 30 years, as long as it takes them to make these movies. Another piece of development news, which I think is kind of interesting in terms of the timing, is Fast and Furious 9 has been pushed back to a 2020 release date, which is insanely far down the calendar considering how quickly they had been cranking these movies out. In fact, the only thing that really slowed them down at one point was when Paul Walker died unexpectedly, and they had to retool the movie, figure out what to do, and then figure out what to do with the next film. But this was going like once every 2 years, they were dropping a movie like this, and 2020 is a little bit far down the road considering how fast and furiously they'd been making these movies. And I'm curious to see where they go with this. What, are they going to go to space next? Another piece of development news that just makes me feel all warm and giddy is Bob's Burgers, the TV show, which I absolutely love. And I think it's a lot of fun. It's one of the great animations on Fox. You know, as much as Disney kind of owns animation for kids, but it's Fox as a network that really has a corner on the, I'm not going to say adult animation because that makes it sound like pornography, the grown-up animation, stuff like Simpsons, all the Seth MacFarlane shows, you know, American Dad and Family Guy. And of course, Bob's Burgers is in there as well. And if you also want to include something like Archer, which is on the FX channel and is way more adult than even Bob's Burgers is. And Bob's Burgers can be kind of fun. I mean, it's like Simpsons marginally adult. It has a lot of jokes that would probably go over little kids' heads. I actually watch Bob's Burgers with my 9-year-old. We got into watching it. You know, on Saturday mornings, I'd wake up and I'd be having my coffee and he'd be having a cereal and he'd let him have some of my coffee. Of course, it was mostly creamer. And we'll sit there and watch Bob's Burgers and have coffee on Saturday mornings. It's a really charming little thing that I do with my kid. But they're going to be making a movie for Bob's Burgers, which that's one thing that warms the cockles of my heart, because I love Bob's Burgers. I think it's a funny show. And my favorite character is Tina, because she is so insane with her puberty brain. But I love Gene as well. And of course, Louise is great. These characters are so unique and well formed in their absurdity. And I also know what it's like to kind of be, just be an average guy trying to take care of wrangle kids in the process of life. But I have always been reticent for a TV show that is on the air at the time getting a movie in the theaters. On one hand, it's neat because you can do bigger and better things. But on the other hand, I feel it's kind of pointless because what can't you do in just like a couple long two-part episodes? I even remember back when X-Files did it, the very first one they did. It was an okay movie, but then you're asking people to go to the theater and keep things straight with TV. And for especially for a continuous plot show like the X-Files, it just seemed sort of silly. But then, of course, when they did The Simpsons 10 years ago, which was a huge hit, of course, and it did do stuff that was a little different because it wasn't just an extended Simpsons episode, but I still felt like, well, then you can go back home and you can watch it on TV for free. So I'm looking forward to Bob's Burgers. I just hope that they do something good with it on the big screen and they do something more than just an extended episode, which is what I wish for every movie that emerges from a television program. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to look at comes out on October 27th, and it is Bill Nye, Science Guy.
I wanted to make young people excited about science again.
Science!
I studied at Cornell University. I decided to take astronomy from this famous professor, Carl Sagan. He said, kids resonate to science, and I really embraced that.
The Science Guy show contained the science that excited Bill. And you, the viewer, can't help but be just as excited as the instructor.
Nowadays, I'm talking to adults, and I'm not mincing words. Climate is changing. It's our fault. We got to get to work on this.
I remember Bill Nye kind of coming to prominence in the 90s. I was not a young enough kid to like watch his show. I was actually, at the time, I was going to school for a secondary degree in education to teach science, actually. I have a degree to teach science to high schoolers for chemistry and biology. And of course, I don't do that because I find that way too interesting to actually teach to high school kids because they don't care. But at the time I was getting my degree, Bill Nye was becoming known as the Science Guy. The Bill Nye the Science Guy show was developing and becoming more and more watched by younger kids. And there were always science shows. I remember there was this guy, his name was Julius Sumner Miller, who would do these things. But Bill Nye really kind of brought science to the coolness. Science, you got to get past the coolness, and then you do get into the deeper mathematical, more analytical stuff, but he did do some great stuff for science. This is looking at his career and his trajectory after the show, and now that he's kind of become a public figure, and he's done like well-known debates with that guy down at the Creation Museum down in Kentucky, and he, of course, his big thing now is climate change, and you hear that in the trailer. So yes, this is going to be tackling that issue. I just want to see it more for the interest in Bill Nye and what he does for science in bringing it to the mainstream. And yes, it's going to be an issue-driven movie as well. But I think the way Bill Nye approaches things, even though he's not a full science expert in terms of like has a PhD, he talks to the right people. And that's, I think, what makes it work for Bill Nye as a character. So I am looking forward to this movie. The next one I want to talk about is Gotti, which opens on December 15th.
Our job now is to maintain leadership. I nominate John Gotti.
To the new boss! Hello.
Let everybody know. Now everybody comes to me.
I'm so proud of you.
You should be running your own crew now.
Mr. Gotti, are you the head of the Gambino crime family?
I'm the head of my family.
Mrs. Gotti, do you know what your husband does for a living?
He provides.
John's getting too much press. That can't go unchecked.
This, of course, stars John Travolta as John Gotti. It looks like a very typical end-of-the-year award bait movie where they're looking to get John Travolta an Academy Award nomination for John Gotti. Pretty much, the people want to play a gangster in a period piece or a biopic, and that helps them out in getting an award nomination. Will he get a nomination? I don't know. I think they have confidence in him because it's coming out on December 15th, so they're pushing the release as late as possible. But we'll see. This looks like it could be good. It looks like it could be kind of going through the motions as well. We'll see in December. That is it for the segment. I got to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be interviewing Mitch Davis, the writer and director of The Stray.
from Struck Films.
Where did you come from?
The true story of a stray dog.
Who are you?
That's Pluto.
Who saves a struggling family in more ways than one.
What's wrong?
This isn't working anymore.
Sometimes help comes from the most unlikely places.
I don't need you.
He's trying. He really is.
Sometimes one dog can change everything.
You're awfully small, aren't we, boy?
From the director of The Other Side of Heaven, The Stray. Rated PG. For theater locations and more information, visit thestray.movie. In theaters now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first segment, I'm actually going to take some time and talk to Mitch Davis, who's a former Disney studio executive. He worked on movies like Newsies and Pretty Woman and Dead Poets Society. So, I mean, he was involved in some of these classic Disney movies of the 90s. Davis eventually left that job and became a writer and director, and he does his own independent films. So he is now releasing the movie The Stray. Out in theaters today, it's got a nationwide release, over 600 theaters, and it's essentially an autobiographical movie about him and his family.
What in the world?
Hang on a second. Who are you?
That's Pluto. That's our new stray dog. This isn't working anymore. You working at the studio day and night.
What about our dreams?
My dream is a happy family. We're not doing so well.
Pluto!
He's trying. He really is, son. Can you just give him a break?
I have to ask, first off, it's a true story. It's about you and your family's dog. But there's also some harrowing stuff that happens in it right at the beginning. How much of this is real? How much of this is drawn from real life? And how much, without giving spoilers, how much is manufactured for the story?
It actually is all true. There's nothing in the movie that happens that didn't really happen in our family's life. So we didn't spice it up. We didn't really have to. It was a pretty remarkable tale in and of itself, and we just told the truth.
Have you always been a dog person?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with dogs as a kid in California, and then none through my college years and young married years. Pluto was the first real pet that we ever had after I got married and started our family.
How did you approach this from the independent angle? Can you talk about just the route you took to get it into so many theaters? Because it's close to 700 theaters this weekend. Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly. I've made a few independent films, and I have a single investor who's invested in three of my movies, one of the very first and then the last two, just being one of them. So fortunately, all I really had to do was take this idea, this script, this movie to him, and he put up the money and we were able to go forward. The distribution, however, has been a process of just the movie gathering momentum sort of its own merit, and that's a real gift. The more people who see it, the more who like it, and the more who talk about it and create positive buzz, and there was enough buzz in the marketplace that a major company came and acquired the film and said, hey, let's grow this movie, let's make it mighty. And our original plan was to be in 50 to 100 screens, and all of a sudden we're in almost 700.
Can you talk a little bit about finding the right dog to play Pluto?
It's a tough balance with trained animals in movies. You want to have an animal who is trained enough to do what you want him or her to do when you want him or her to do it, but you also want them to have a little bit of life and spunk in their personality. It's kind of easy to get a dog or another animal that is so docile that they don't seem like a real animal anymore. They just seem like a placeholder. So we were really lucky to find right here in the state of Utah a motion picture animal family with a long, long history of wrangling for the movies. And they just happened to have a dog who looked just right and really delivered for us.
Because, of course, they always say don't work with kids and dogs. And so, of course, you want to run out and you made a movie with kids and dogs then, huh?
Oh, my gosh. This is the first time I've ever worked with kids or dogs. And I had them both at once. But it was a delight. I mean, once you sort of figure it out, the first day was a disaster because I just had no idea that they wouldn't do exactly what you said every time, like an adult actor. But then once you sort of figured out that you just had to roll with the punches and maybe rewrite your movie occasionally on set, once you kind of let go of it, it's kind of fun. It's kind of a creative process.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, where I'm talking with Mitch Davis, writer and director of The Stray. What was the shooting schedule for this?
We shot this movie in only 19 days. My leanest schedule ever. We actually had 21 days, but we had good weather and we shot efficiently and got it done in 19.
And how do you balance making, obviously it's an interpersonal drama and a lot of character issues, but you also, you know, start out with helicopter shots of Colorado, which are gorgeous. How do you approach a business decision between saying, we're going to do an expensive shot so it looks really good, but we might suffer elsewhere budgetarily? How do you strike that balance?
It's never easy to decide how you're going to spend your money when your money is limited, which it almost always is when you're making an independent film. In our case, we decided early on that although our movie, our story is kind of small, we wanted our movie to feel big. And there's nothing quite as big as the great outdoors. So when we were in the Rocky Mountains, we wanted them to pop. So yeah, we spent money on aerial shots and big wides because they fill up the screen.
Now, one of the things that obviously made news, there's been a lot of dog movies, especially recently with stuff like Megan Levy and even A Dog's Purpose. And
yeah,
of course, there was the big controversy about The Dog's Purpose where there's allegations that there was a mistreatment. I'm assuming you went into production with this before any of that happened, but what sort of precautions do you take just to make sure that everybody's treated fairly, whether they got two legs or four legs on a set?
Yeah, that's a great question. We watched what happened with The Dog's Purpose very keenly. It was a sad thing that happened all the way around, hurt the movie and apparently traumatized the dog. We had an American Humane Society, an employee of the Humane Society on our set every day that our dog was on set, watching every single thing we did and consulting with us. And we made whatever adjustments she requested or took whatever precautions she suggested, and we're proud to be able to have the American Humane Society's seal of approval all over the movie.
What's your favorite dog movie ever? Aside from this one. Aside from this one, of course.
You know, I think that Old Yeller really would have to be my all-time favorite. That and Where the Red Fern Grows, those two kind of together, they're both rite of passage movies that talk about, you know, a boy kind of walking into manhood through the companionship of a faithful dog or dogs, in the case of Where the Red Fern Grows. So I'd say both those movies influenced me greatly.
Real heartstring tuggers on both of them, huh?
No, both those movies have sad endings, and yet they have a kind of beauty about them. I guess you don't have an appreciation for life unless you have the proximity of death. And in both cases, the boy kind of becomes a man by having to process that.
Yeah.
But, they tug at the heartstrings, but they also uplift. You know, you don't walk away from those movies just depressed. You walk away from those movies appreciating life.
Mitch, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about The Stray.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. And everybody, hit the theaters this weekend, October 6th. Nationwide, fill up the theaters so we can stay in the theaters and make our movie seen by more people longer.
And that is it for this segment. If you want to hear the full interview, which is about twice as long as what you heard here on the show, you can go to the fatguysatthemovies.com website. But that's it. I need to go to a break. Coming up next, my review of Blade Runner 2049 and a look at My Little Pony, the epic big screen movie. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit the big movie that everyone's talking about this week, and that is Blade Runner 2049. In this sequel to the classic Ridley Scott film, Ryan Gosling plays a Blade Runner trying to track down and retire rogue replicants.
Every leap of civilization was built off the back of slaves. Replicants are the future, but I can only make so many. I had the lock, and he has the key. I think I found him.
That's not possible. If this gets out, we've bought ourselves a war.
First of all, I just want to warn you, I'm going to be a little bit cagey in how I tiptoe around some of the details of this film as I talk about it. One of the things that happened when I went to the screening is there was a message, and this is not uncommon for big movies or like what the studio would be considering important movies. There's sometimes have statements the director has put out, and you have to read them as part of the reviewing press, and you will politely abide by the request. And in this, Denis Villeneuve, who directed this, is basically saying, I enjoy the movie, please don't spoil it for anybody else in your review. And then as we left the theater, there was another statement we had to read, which basically said, don't give away this, don't talk about this, don't talk about this. And what's funny is there's stuff in there that we were requested not to talk about. These aren't like third act reveals. They're like literally the setup of the movie. They're literally something you see happen or you learn 5 minutes into the film. I mean, I was kind of shocked at some of the things. Can I say that it takes place in 2049? But with that said, this is the kind of movie you want to see, not cold, because this is the kind of movie you absolutely should watch the first film. If you've not seen Blade Runner, I don't care which version it is, whether it's the theatrical cut, or whether it's the director's cut, or it's the ultimate director's cut, or it's the Fandango cut, or if it's the Blu-ray, DVD, launchpad cut, I don't care which one it is, at least go see it once. Or at the very least, do your due diligence and read the plot synopsis on Wikipedia. Because this movie does kind of hit the ground running. I have known about Blade Runner enough, and it's become so legendary in science fiction that it was kind of impossible for me to go in and know what it would be like knowing nothing about this, because it's sort of second nature. It's like going into a Star Wars movie without knowing the background of Star Wars. The difference is Star Wars is so steeped in our pop culture, whereas Blade Runner wasn't a huge hit in 1982, and there are people who still debate whether it's a great movie, but it's become so iconic, but not a whole lot of people in the mainstream are well-versed in it, as opposed to, you know, say Jedi, everybody knows what a Jedi is. You say replicants, not everybody knows. What's funny about Blade Runner is I remember, I've seen it 3 or 4 times in the last 20 years, but I mean, the first one takes place in 2019. I mean, we are 2 years away from Blade Runner. We are literally actually, what, like 15 months away from Blade Runner, because 2019 is not, it's just around the corner. You've got all of 2018 and you got only like 3 months left of 2017. And then suddenly we're in Blade Runner territory. Where are hovering cars, people? Come on, manufacturers, Ford, Lincoln, Chrysler, Mercury, get the hover cars out, for crying out loud. Replicants? Yeah, sure. We can wait for those. I want the flying car. So anyways, I remember when this was first being buzzed about as a movie, and it was right around the time that Prometheus had come out, or it was right before Prometheus had come out. And of course, Prometheus is a divisive movie. It is something that people were not happy with. A lot of people were not happy. I loved it, but a lot of people were not happy with it. And I think the reason for that is Ridley Scott directed both. He directed Alien, and when he's like, people are like, oh, you're going to do a prequel to Alien? Oh, yeah, but it's Ridley Scott just didn't want, I mean, he's been doing this for decades. He didn't want to just redo Alien. He didn't just want to play around in the same sandbox. He wanted to do something different. Not in sort of like a way like McGee will come in and be like, I want to make this my own Alien movie. I don't know if that's the way McGee talks. That's how he talks in my head. But Ridley Scott just didn't want to redo Alien. He didn't want to play so close to the breast on that first movie that he went way out there and he explored totally different ideas and themes. And then, of course, when he came and did Alien Covenant earlier this year, he kind of tried to have best of both worlds and it kind of fell apart in the middle. So getting Denis Villeneuve, who is, first of all, a great visionary director. I mean, I thought I was lukewarm on Arrival, but I loved Sicario, and I thought Prisoners was well done, especially his movie Enemy, which fewer people know about, which was a smaller little movie that nobody knew who he was. It came out before Prisoners. Great little movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and dealing with doppelgangers and such. But Villeneuve is a great director. He's visionary, and he takes a lot of care making sure this is a legitimate, appropriate, and authentic sequel to Blade Runner. He doesn't blow up any ideas from the first one. He doesn't disregard stuff from the first one. He very much honors the original source material. I'm not talking about Philip K. Dick's book, because the movie's nothing like the book. I'm talking about him making a movie that you really could feel this is a movie that takes place in the Blade Runner universe. You watch this film and you're like, oh yeah, I can totally see a seamless transition over several decades from that first film to become this movie. With the music, with the cinematography, with the look, and just the feeling and tone of the film. Now, that can be good and bad for some people, because I know that for some people, including me to a degree, Blade Runner is tough to watch. It's a long, drawn-out, at times, overlong movie, depending on which version you watch. But I respect the heck out of it. It's not my favorite science fiction movie, but I revere it as a great of science fiction, even though it's maybe not my go-to movie for comfort food. It's all hinged on Ryan Gosling as this Blade Runner, as the new Blade Runner that we're following, and it deals with a lot of the same ideas. It deals with sense of identity and class structure and religious ideas and ideas of evolution and what makes a species and what makes a species better than another species and how species can ascend and what is the next step. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff that was going around in the first film that is also contemplated here, and that's wonderful and that's great. And I think it authentically feels like it's struggling with the same questions and answers that the original film has. Now, if you want a hardcore, this is what everything meant from the first film, you're not going to get that. It's still sort of, they don't spoon feed this movie to you, which I think is part of the strength of Blade Runner. But I'll tell you, it's a visually arresting movie. It's gorgeous. I mean, if there's anything that I think going into award season that's going to win the Academy Award for cinematography, it's this movie. Maybe even for soundtrack, because the soundtrack is brilliantly evolved from the soundtrack of the original film, but it's done with a traditional score. It's a gorgeously put together movie. It's assembled beautifully. It's got a fantastic cast. I mean, in a certain way, it does feel like Harrison Ford stumble off a couch in a drunken stupor and just go through the film. He doesn't add a whole lot to it aside from just being that guy who played the original character of Deckard. And Jared Leto is in the film for no other reason than pretentious exposition. He does get annoying after a while. At one point I was like, what is the purpose of this guy? I mean, it's like in Tyrell in the original movie, you're like, oh yeah, Tyrell was there to explain how this all fit together. And he's the replicant designer, but he's just there to just be pretentious and annoying. So I'm not a big fan of his performance or his character, but overall, it's a fantastic movie to contemplate. It's a movie I want to see again, and it runs long. It's like 2 hours and 40 some minutes, but it doesn't feel that way. And that's a feat for a movie that is pushing 3 hours. So I'm going to have to say Blade Runner 2049 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Real quick, I don't have much time. Let's talk about My Little Pony. The magical world of Equestria is threatened by an invading pony who wants to take over the realm.
I'm Princess Twilight Sparkle, and this is my home, Equestria. A land filled with magic, and most importantly, friendship. Life is perfect. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Put your hooves together for Commander Tempest!
How about we start with your complete and total surrender?
No big surprise this was not screened. It wasn't screened. It was screened for some people. It wasn't screened down here in Columbus, and I wasn't going to go out of town to see My Little Pony. This is very much a targeted market. It's for the girls who watch the show and the bronies who watch the show, and maybe their parents and nobody else. They didn't show it to me. I've watched some of the My Little Pony stuff. You know, one of my kids is a brony. They're kind of into the show. You know, these are harmless, fun, little cute films, but I don't expect this to be any different or better or worse than what's already out there on television and on direct-to-DVD movies. So, My Little Pony, it wasn't screened, so it does get a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Mountain Between Us, Generational Sins, the weekly box office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Cult of Chucky.
From Struck Films.
Where did you come from?
The true story of a stray dog.
Who are you?
That's Pluto.
Who saves a struggling family in more ways than one.
What's wrong?
This isn't working anymore.
Sometimes help comes from the most unlikely places.
I don't need you.
He's trying. He really is.
Sometimes one dog can change everything.
You're awfully small on me, boy.
From the director of The Other Side of Heaven, The Stray, rated PG. For theater locations and more information, visit thestray.movie. In theaters now.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Mountain Between Us. A man and a woman are stranded on a snow-covered mountain after a disastrous plane crash.
Anybody?
Alex, can you look at me?
You really hurt your leg.
Your phone smashed. My phone has no signal and we're pretty high up on the mountain.
If we stay here, we're safe.
If we leave search and rescue, they're less likely to find us.
Look, I don't want to die up here because you're too scared to take a risk.
Someone's looking for us.
The pilot didn't file a flight plan.
Nobody knows where we are. We're all we've got, me and you.
This was also not screened. I mean, I expected My Little Pony to not be screened because it's a kid's movie and it has a very limited market. But The Mountain Between Us, this just screams award bait. I mean, it's got Idris Elba in it. It's got Kate Winslet, who's going to be in the new Avatar movies. Did you hear that? This is exactly the kind of movie you would expect that would be going for some sort of award fodder. And you think, oh, well, you know, award fodder movie with great cinematography because they're out there on the top of a mountain. Oh, let's run it up against Blade Runner, which is also going to be award consideration, considering Villeneuve was been revered for the last couple of years in his movies, and they've all gotten nominations of some sort. And Roger Deakins' work on Blade Runner 2049 is groundbreaking even for today, and it looks gorgeous, and it's at the very least, it's a shoo-in for a nomination. I think it's going to win for Best Cinematography. But The Mountain Between Us, yeah, it doesn't matter that. It doesn't care that we're on a mountain here. It's gorgeous and beautiful, and you've got two great actors on it. Let's bury this thing. So critics can't really weigh into it. I don't think I've heard no buzz about this movie. I've not been asked about this movie. It feels like it's just being almost squeaked out just early enough to not get trampled by all the other award films, but also just not a high enough profile that anybody cares. I mean, it looks like it's a fine movie. The problem is that this time of year, you just get so tired of these movies of the message of the human spirit and fighting against all the odds and, oh my gosh, there's a... I'm sure it's a wonderful film, and I'm sure I'll get a screener for it in the next couple months. I'll watch it then, and I'll be doing award film roundups, because there's a bunch of movies they didn't screen, and I'm like, you know what? Screw them. I'm going to wait until they send me a screener when they want me to see the movie, as opposed to them not showing it to me and then asking if I was going to give it a good review. So, The Mountain Between Us, that gets a preemptive suck. I'm dismissing it.
It sucks.
The next movie I want to talk about is Generational Sins. It's a smaller release and a platform release. After the death of their mother, two estranged brothers return to their hometown to make peace with the memory of their alcoholic father.
So what's in her hometown?
Dad.
The loner brother was in love. Is still in love?
I'm surprised to see you.
I'm back.
Yeah, some things never change, do they?
No, they don't. No matter how hard you try.
What does the sheriff mean? It's a bad history of repeating.
This is one of those movies where its heart's in the right place. This is a movie trying to examine the very common, some might say cliched idea that you can never go home again. But maybe you can. And it's about these brothers who return back to their hometown after the older one left because of the alcoholic father and kind of abandoned the mother and his brother to live with their father and couldn't be their protector. And all the cliches and tropes are there. You know, you've got the anger between the brothers because they're adversarial and they're not getting along and they kind of come from two different walks of life. And you've got the mother who just wants everybody to be friends. And they got them going back to the hometown and there's this old girlfriend of the older brother, and they're trying to just sort of reconcile not just their father's history and the legacy that their father left them in this town, but their own history of being in this town and being somewhat wayward youths because of living with an alcoholic, crazy, abusive father. So it's all there. The problem is, it's just there's not a whole lot of finesse to this film. It just leans into all the cliches. And I didn't really like the characters. And that's always a challenge when you've got somebody who's got a proclivity for violence as a character. But You got to make him likable, and you can't just have him brooding and wrestling with ideas and sitting there at a bar staring at a beer or a shot of whiskey and beating things up at home and flipping a table, which is what they have. They have all of those cliches. It just, this movie just kind of bored me. Now, maybe if you're into this sort of thing, if you want that more into, I mean, it's well shot, it's well made, and the acting's pretty good. It does not feel like an independent film. It does not feel cheap. In fact, the worst thing about it is the writing to deliver a really solid screenplay. It just doesn't have it there, and it doesn't have the chemistry. I didn't really like the character. So yeah, maybe you will. Maybe somebody else will watch this and enjoy it. So I'm going to have to say Generational Sins kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week I said that Kingsman was going to have about $20 million and American Made was going to be a bit over $16 million, and it's going to be holding possible for possibly a second place win. The original, when the first numbers came out, it was winning. It was actually going to come back and retake first place. But when the final, the studio actuals came out on Monday, Kingsman, The Golden Circle beat it by like $30,000. They both made just a hair under $17 million. Which underperformed for Kingsman and overperformed slightly for It, according to what people were tracking it to do, which shows the strength of It continuing in the movie theaters and also showing that Kingsman isn't going to be this runaway hit that the original was, that it's playing a bit more like a sequel that isn't charging an audience necessary. And American Made struggled and hit it right around the same. I mean, really, it was Kingsman, It, and American Made. They were separated by less than $200,000 each between the three. They were all like just under $17 million. And then the Lego Ninjago was $11 million. Flatliners flatlined. You saw that pun all over the place in box office reports last weekend. Made less than $6 million. Till Death Do Us Part made $1.5 million. That is not good for this kind of movie. This kind of movie tends to do really well, especially in the September-October timeframe. So that should make the producers a little bit nervous on that one. But still, these didn't hold a candle to Kingsman, It, and American Made. And I really think that American Made's going to tank a bit. And its second week, there's still going to be holding from It. But everything's going to lose to Blade Runner 2049. Now, the big thing is, how much is it going to make? I'm going to just say a safe bet around $50 million. I don't think it's going to be a huge, massive money-making hit because it's a cerebral movie. It's aimed at the critics. It's a sequel to a 35-year-old movie that really had to gain an audience on DVD, and it's kind of that hardcore science fiction audience anyways. So it's not exactly mainstream, but it does have a lot going for it and a lot of buzz, and there's not a ton of competition in terms of big stuff until Thor comes out at the end of the month, well, at the beginning of next month. So I think that Blade Runner is good for 50. Everything else is going to be fighting around $10 million-ish for the next place, and it's just going to be this horse race among like three or four movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Because it's Halloween, I haven't talked about a horror movie yet, so let's talk about Cult of Chucky. The killer doll from the 80s returns, this time at a mental asylum, in a new bid to possess real human form.
Mika, the murders were real.
Chucky never was.
That's right. He was a fantasy. A delusion.
Chucky told me. He's coming for you.
It's important that we all explore it together as a group.
I think I have something that will help.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
First, he'll kill each and every one of you in the most horrible ways you can imagine. And then he'll kill me too.
I've always enjoyed the Child's Play movies. It's kind of the way I enjoy the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They're a little bit more than just a killer with a mask. There's something fun. I mean, it plays off this trope of crazy killer dolls, and those are always fun to deal with. And, I mean, the original Child's Play was good, and the second and third were actually decent sequels. It starts to spin out of control once they got to, like, Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. It goes real goofy. They did bring it back for Curse of Chucky a couple years ago. It's been 4 years since Curse of Chucky. I didn't realize it'd been that long. But Curse of Chucky was a great way to sort of reboot the franchise into a direct-to-DVD series. And this follows that story, and it follows that flavor where it's not as goofy and tongue-in-cheek, and it doesn't chew all the scenery the way Seed of Chucky and Bride of Chucky did. It's a good child's play. It's about on the level of Curse of Chucky, which was good and fun. It's neat to see Fiona Dourif, who's the daughter of the guy who does the voice for Chucky, Brad Dourif. It's nice to see her in the movie. And I mean, it's I love movies that take place in insane asylums anyway. And of course, they give a little nod to Cuckoo's Nest because Brad Dourif was in Cuckoo's Nest. But it's fun. If you like the Chucky movies, you're going to like this. And it's very much cut from the same good guy's cloth that Curse of Chucky was. So yeah, I'm going to have to say Cult of Chucky was a lot of fun.
It rocks.
Excellent!
There's other movies out. Pirates of the Caribbean's Dead Man Chest is out this week. I talked about it last week because I knew I was going to be doing Cult of Chucky this week. A Ghost Story, House of Cards Season 5, The Book of Henry, and American Horror Story Season 6. And that is it for the week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Foreigner and Happy Death Day. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.